Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's speech today in a small town in Kansas that was the site of a famous speech by Theodore Roosevelt in 1910. James Kloppenberg, Professor of History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University, joins us. He's the author of a new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Tradition. We will discuss the populist tone the President is now adopting, asking for a fair shot and a fair share, and whether Obama will follow Teddy Roosevelt's example and go after the big monopolies and powerful interests now defined as the 1%. Then Nina Khrushcheva, the granddaughter of a former Soviet leader, joins us to discuss the Russian elections and the demonstrations that followed them. She is just back from Moscow, and we'll gauge the level of disgust and fatigue the Russian people have for the revolving door leadership of Putin and Medvedev, whose United Russia party is widely reported to have engaged in massive fraud, prompting Secretary of State Clinton to condemn the elections and call for a full investigation. Then finally, we'll be joined by two activists involved in the Occupy Our Homes movement who tried to prevent the eviction of a homeowner and support the reoccupation of a foreclosed home by its previous owner today in nearby Southgate and Riverside. Peggy Mears, a community organizer with ACE, the Alliance for Californians for Community Empowerment, spearheaded one of the actions, and Chase Golding, one of the organizers of Occupy LA, who was involved in the other action, will address how the Occupy movement is now engaged in occupying foreclosed homes. Joining us now is James Kloppenberg, who's the Charles Warren Professor of American History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University. His books include Uncertain Victory, Social Democracy and Progressism in Europe and American Thought, 1870 to 1920, The Virtues of Liberalism, A Companion to American Thought, and his new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Kloppenberg.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And today the president declared the middle class in jeopardy and outlined a populist economic vision calling for a fair shot and a fair share. And clearly he was channeling, shall we say, President Theodore Roosevelt, since he was in the same place where Roosevelt gave a speech in 1910 where he called for a square deal for regular Americans. Do you think this is...
It's a good point, and he is quite clearly trying to hearken back to a very progressive Republican president. When Roosevelt ran in 1912, he ran as a third-party candidate, as the Progressive Party candidate, but he had served indeed as president as a Republican. And in calling for a square deal, he was advancing the cause of most of the reformers in the multifaceted movement that was called progressivism. And I think what President Obama is trying to do is to rekindle that progressive spirit.
Well, Roosevelt went further, I think, in that particular speech that the president is echoing. He said the fight for progress was a conflict between the men who possess more than they have earned and the men who have earned more than they possess. Pretty powerful, simple framing, I'd say.
It is powerful, and it not only harkens back, Obama's speech not only harkens back to Teddy Roosevelt, it harkens back further than that to Abraham Lincoln. People sometimes forget today that language of earned income was the language of most Americans from the 18th century through the 19th century and into the 20th century. The notion that income that is earned from other sources is somehow legitimate is a fairly recent phenomenon in American history, and the notion that attacking that unearned wealth is somehow un-American or populist or a version of class warfare strikes most historians as almost comic, because this has been the central line of American thought on politics and economics for a very long time.
Well, of course, Theodore Roosevelt was an accidental president, and in many ways, comparisons have been made to the Gilded Age, where McKinley represented the plutocrats against William Jennings Bryan, who were then the populists. And of course, the irony was in those days, populism amongst the rural poor and the urban poor was in many ways reposed in religion. In other words, you had a religious left back then.
You did, and we've had a religious left in America ever up until very recently. I mean, that was one of the striking things about reform in America for much of our history, that the most radical people economically have been, in many cases, the most fervently Christian, and the notion that somehow inequality has become the ideology of American Christians, again, strikes historians as a very peculiar development, because it's certainly not the way things played out in the 19th or the first half of the 20th century.
So, James Kloppenberg, do you believe that the president can put history back in its rightful place and revive this? I take it you consider this a dormant movement?
Well, I wouldn't even call it dormant. I think it's the position that he took in 2008. In fact, it's the position that he took in the second of his two books, The Audacity of Hope. And anyone who has read that book will recognize the speech today as coming straight out of Obama's analysis of American history and American politics in that very fine book. So I think he is simply returning to the strategies that he adopted that got him elected to the Senate from Illinois and that he took with him to Washington. I think since his election to the presidency, he's tried very hard to work with the Republican Party and has tried to be a compromiser, a conciliator, someone who could find common ground, because that's the way he thinks democracy should work. And the Republicans have demonstrated now through all of his presidency that they don't see it that way, that they would prefer to be obstructionists. So I think he has learned his lesson, and my sense is that this is the opening speech of the 2012 presidential campaign.
So, James Kloppenberg, is that to say then that this forthcoming election, you know, we've got a whole year plus to go, but could it be therefore framed around a kind of religious left and a religious right? There's no question that the religious right has tremendous power within the Republican Party, and particularly in the nominating process. They control the Iowa caucus effectively, and as you can see, most of the candidates are kowtowing to them, with the exception of Romney, who's a Mormon and is therefore not particularly welcomed by the religious right. So if they can have a litmus test on that side, why not the president, in effect, use the real ammunition in the Bible? Because after all, the prophet Jesus ministered to the poor. He didn't carry an AK-47. He didn't hate homosexuals. And he didn't go on television asking for money.
Exactly so. You're quite right. And this tradition of what is called the social gospel in America has had a long and distinguished history. And Obama himself has aligned himself with that tradition that originates in the late 19th century and gathers momentum up to the middle of the 20th century. And as far as he's concerned, I think the way you put it is exactly right, that this is a tradition that historically sided with the disfranchised. It sided with the poor and the downtrodden. And I think what he wants to do is to remind American Christians that this is a gospel of benevolence that they claim to believe in and not a gospel of greed and selfishness. And I think calling Americans back to that older reading of the gospel is, from my perspective, a very strong argument for him to make. Again, this is something he's been committed to for a very long time. It comes through both in his autobiography and in his second book, and it's an understanding of Christianity that I think has very deep roots, as you understand, and I think what he's trying to do is just to remind people of that.
Again, I'm speaking with James Kloppenberg, who is professor of American history and chair of the history department at Harvard University and author of the new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. Well, clearly, I don't know how religious Theodore Roosevelt was, but he sure shook up the big trusts. I referred to him earlier as a sort of accidental precedent, in as much as McKinley was assassinated, and he was clearly put on the ticket to balance out the plutocrats' dominance of the party at that time. I take it he took a lot of people by surprise. What more can the president learn from Theodore Roosevelt in terms of mimicking him?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot more for him to learn, because the trajectory of their two careers is so different. I think the conception that there is nothing anti or un-American about calling for greater equality and calling for a square deal, as Roosevelt did, is a theme that President Obama will do well to recover. I think that the Republicans have been arguing for quite a while that there's somehow something illegitimate about this call for equality. And I think it's striking in the audacity of hope that President Obama notes that when Thomas Jefferson came back from writing the Declaration of Independence, the first thing he did when he got home to Virginia was to file legislation to end the two practices that had preserved great wealth in Europe, primogeniture and entail. These were the methods by which European aristocrats maintained their fortunes. And America began with an assault on that notion of passing down fortunes from one generation to another. So the idea that there is something un-American about a challenge to inequality that has become stifling, which is what we face in our own day, is a fantasy. It's a myth. And I think the president knows enough about American history to make that clear. So when self-styled historians such as Newt Gingrich spin out their fantasies about American history, I think this is a president who actually has the goods, who will be able to call them on it and offer facts rather than fantasies of American history.
So, James Kloppenberg, do you think the president was clever in choosing the site, clearly aimed at echoing Theodore Roosevelt, and choosing a lot of the language that Roosevelt gave in 1910 about inequality being the defining issue of our time? And you know, of course, that the Republicans have already been accusing him of being a socialist, and at least some of them are running and anti-American and not even an American. We know all of the poisonous stuff that's been said, but clearly they've been trying to tie him to the Occupy movement that the world's highest paid historian Newt Gingrich refers to as a bunch of people who need a bath. He I think deftly tied himself to that movement via Roosevelt, didn't he?
Well, I think what he's trying to do is to call attention to the same issue that has been animating most of the occupiers, which is the issue of increasing inequality in America. And I don't see that as an issue that is the issue of the occupiers alone. That's an issue that many people in the Democratic Party have been calling attention to for a very long time. In the 1912 election, it was not only Theodore Roosevelt who was contesting that, but also his successor, William Howard Taft, and Woodrow Wilson. And in that election in 1912, one could argue that all of the major candidates had gotten on board with this program of graduated income tax, of economic regulation, of minimum wage, an eight-hour day, which were innovations at the time. And I think that that was the moment when the old notions of laissez-faire really did come to an end, and that was the moment in which every party had embraced the idea of progressive politics and progressive economics. So I think what the president is trying to do, and you may be right that this is a shrewd move on his part, is to remind Republicans that their own party has in its background moderates who were not opposed to a graduated income tax, who were not opposed to economic regulation, and who believed that inequality was a serious problem for everyone in the United States, not just something that appealed to the great unwashed, as the Republican Party candidates this year are trying to pretend it is.
Well, it's relatively recently, President Eisenhower, a Republican, in his day, the wealthiest Americans paid 92% in income tax. Now they pay 35%, and the Republicans are offering them less.
Right. No, it's true.
Times have changed.
And, President Obama made the point in his speech today that he's not even talking about returning to those days of 80 and 90% marginal tax rates at the very top. He's talking only about returning to the Clinton years when the top marginal tax rate was 39%. And I think as the year unfolds, he will remind the American people that the years of the greatest economic growth in the United States were the years from the New Deal up through 1980, when tax rates were much higher than they are today. And again, the mythology that somehow high taxes mean no economic growth and low taxes mean great economic growth is simply not borne out by the facts. We had much greater economic growth during those years. We even had much greater economic growth during the Clinton years than we've had since the Bush tax cuts. And the notion that we should go back to a situation that has been proven not to work for the vast majority of Americans, so that the situation that worked very, very well for the top 1 or 2% can continue as it did during the Bush years, is to me an extraordinarily anti-American ideology. And yet the challenge to that ideology is being called un-American. And I think what the president is trying to do is to remind his listeners that this tradition of challenging inequality is as old as the United States, and it has distinguished champions as they go back as far as Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and include Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt, as well as Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, the president in his speech specifically took aim at the Republicans, saying that their philosophy is that we're better off when everyone is left to fend for themselves and play by their own rules. Now, that it clearly, is, if anything, that is the philosophy of Ayn Rand, who railed against altruism and praised the virtues of selfishness. I don't think Ayn Rand is an American tradition.
No, and I think when someone like Ron Paul tries to pretend that she is and that libertarianism is the genuine American gospel, there's very little in American history that can be offered as evidence of that claim. To the contrary, the progressive income tax, the graduated income tax, has been the law of the land for more than a century. It's been in some states for more than a century. It's been in the United States as a nation since the First World War. And I think until very recently, no one questioned the legitimacy of it. President Obama, I think, did well today to invoke the words of the former Intel CEO, who pointed out, as a lot of people have pointed out in the last century, that those who earned the most owe the most to those who made it possible for them to amass those great fortunes. And again, it's fairly recent for people to deny that interdependence and to claim that somehow it's all theirs because they have no one to they have no debts to anyone for having amassed such fortunes. That's been a position of a tiny minority of people for over a century in the United States. And that transformation that occurred in the 1890s, in which people began to clamor for a graduated income tax because they realized that the sources of wealth were the collective contributions of all persons in the society, not just of a handful of persons, is an ideology that has much deeper roots than this gospel of selfishness and greed that we've been hearing spouted from the Republican candidates this time.
And in terms of the Occupy movement, the president said throughout the country it sparked protests and political movements from the Tea Party to the people who've been occupying the streets of New York and other cities. Again, I think cleverly tying the Tea Party in with the Occupy movement. Just in closing, what's your sense of how much the Occupy movement is going to translate into a political movement, particularly in terms of electoral politics, James Kloppenberg?
It's very hard to say. It's the case that very successful social protest movements begin in just the inchoate way that the Occupy movement is beginning, but it's also the case that unsuccessful social protest movements begin the same way. I think it's too early to say. I think by calling attention to the issue of inequality, they've helped advance the progressive cause by forcing people to confront this problem. And to that extent, I think they might provide impetus toward a renewed progressive reform movement, and I think that President Obama could ride that sentiment to re-election in the White House. But unless the movement broadens itself and translates into a campaign to elect a Democratic Congress, it won't necessarily make as much difference as we might think it would, because we discovered from 2010 until the present that if the president does not have majorities in the House and the Senate, it's very difficult to get anything done. So no matter how progressive his own agenda might be, and anyone who's read his books knows that he is indeed a progressive, not a radical, but a moderate progressive, someone who would like to move one step at a time toward a more egalitarian culture. Unless he has the support of a strong Congress, as Franklin Roosevelt had in the 1930s and 40s, as Lyndon Johnson had in the 1960s, it's very difficult for a progressive party, for a progressive president to get much done. So it's important to call attention to these issues. It's important for the president to do everything he can to assure his reelection. But in the absence of a Democratic Congress, all of that will not mean as much as it might otherwise.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, James Kloppenberg.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with James Kloppenberg, who's the Charles Warren Professor of American History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University. His books include Uncertain Victory, Social Democracy and Progressivism in European and American Thought, 1870 to 1920, The Virtues of Liberalism, A Companion to American Thought, and his new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back in a moment talking about the Russian elections and the demonstrations that followed.
Sing this tear gas riot song to some fresh-faced